the biggest basketball coaching convention of.
You can work on your stroke. Oh, are you looking?
What?
You don't want them there?
I know. I'm talking.
What is going on? Robin, are you okay?
Robin Washington.
Are your kids near you, or what just happened?
Husker Online.
I took a lot of preparation to make this thing a flawless interview, and clearly I still can't avoid it.
Robin Washington, Husker Online.
Maybe it was aliens. Maybe it was a phenomenon that we can't explain.
The Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.
Connor Happer Show, 1620 The Zone. Wednesday before the Sweet 16. And we are joined now by Robin Washit. Robin Washit of Husker Online. Robin, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
Sitting in a radio chair for the day. Filling in. Nothing major.
Worse. Could be worse, could be better. You know,
All right. So I wanted to get you some Nebraska ball questions as the season has now come to an end. Just overall, what's your takeaway from the way the season ended?
There's no denying the ending couldn't have been more disappointing than it was, just considering the scene that it was down there in Memphis, and you know, the way that game started, and just the way that it felt briefly that the stars finally had all aligned to finally get that monkey off the back, and then not just to lose, but to lose in that fashion, kind of got run out of the gym. It was about as big of a letdown, considering the amount of buildup that had led up to that game, that they could possibly imagine. But I think as the dust settled and you kind of look back at the season with a little less of the immediate emotion, I thought it was a pretty significant step in the right direction to where they followed up, a good step the year before where, you know, they got to 500, competed for postseason play, and most importantly, kind of got the culture back on track. They built upon that in a pretty major way this year to where, they actually had good roster retention, maintained that culture, and then supplemented it both with talent and character with what they added in the portal. And that led to one of the most successful, at least regular seasons, in program history. So I think there was far more good than bad, and really has kind of put Nebraska in a situation where going into this offseason, they're once again in a position to take yet another step. And the biggest key is retaining the key roster pieces to maintain that foundation. And then the next most important step is to continue to add talent to, take just the overall quality of the team to that next level to where games like Texas A&M don't happen again. I would say that just the position Nebraska's in right now is as good as it's been in a long, long time, probably in the last 20 years and maybe more. So as much as that loss stung and as awful of an ending as it was, I think the overall totality of the season, is almost a total positive when it comes to continuing the right trajectory for the program.
Yeah, it was interesting watching that game because to me it felt like watching so many of the Nebraska football games over the last handful of years where at the start you're hopeful and it starts really well and you start getting your hopes up a little bit more. But then at some point, and in the game, I think it was like after 6 or 7 minutes, you just start to get this feeling like, oh, this is not going to go the right way. This is going in a bad, bad direction. And it started to feel like just this slow death march to the final whistle. I just wonder what you thought the difference between the two teams were, Texas A&M and Nebraska.
Well, I mean, like looking back on it, I think me and a lot of other people around here probably should have given A&M a lot more credit for what they had become at the end of the year, as opposed to just kind of judging them on the totality of the entire season, because the team that they were, from November to January was a whole lot different than the one that had really kicked it to another gear from March on. So, and the big reason why is because they'd always been a really good rebounding team, physical, that wasn't a surprise. The surprise was how good they were offensively and how well they shot it from the perimeter. And if you go back and look at the previous five or six games, you know, leading into that one, they had flipped a switch. They changed up their starting lineup and, you know, really had kind of changed their personnel and their rotations a little bit to where that shooting improved drastically over the previous few games. And I think, you know, I certainly was guilty of just kind of looking at, oh, maybe this is just a flash in the pan thing. They are what they are. They're a team that lost 14 games this year. You know, we're just a few weeks ago, you know, on the bubble as one of the first four out. So, like, you know, I think it's kind of overlooked them a little bit. But when they shoot like that, you know, make 13 threes and then add in that with the physicality and clear advantage they have on the boards, that's about as bad of a matchup for Nebraska as you could possibly imagine, because not only do they exploit Nebraska's biggest weakness, which is rebounding, especially defensive rebounding, you know, they're also able to counter Nebraska's biggest strength, which is three-point shooting. So it was really kind of just a worst-case scenario for Nebraska with the way A&M shot the ball. And I'll also give them credit with the way that they handled those first 4 to 5 minutes. Not a lot of teams, I don't think, could do that. It felt so much like the Indiana game in the quarterfinals of the Big Ten tournament, where Nebraska absolutely just hit the ground at a full sprint and just blitzed the Hoosiers, and they crumbled. They did not respond well at all. Nebraska took the game over from the very beginning. Well, Nebraska was doing the same things offensively. You know, K-State is hitting his first three threes. The crowd's in an absolute frenzy. And what does A&M do? You know, Wade Taylor just jogs down the court and pops a 25-foot three-pointer from the top of the key and silences the crowd. And they just did that over and over again to where Nebraska eventually cooled off a little bit. And, you know, after all that hot start, they were up by 4 points. And then A&M's just the physicality started to wear Nebraska down. Nebraska couldn't defend them, and they weren't getting rebounds. And it ended up just being a complete avalanche on them. So that's probably the big thing, is that the team Nebraska saw in that game was a whole lot different than I think people assumed A&M was going to be based off of what they were earlier in the year.
For me, it was the three-point shooting was certainly a big factor. I felt like A&M just looked way more athletic, just faster with the ball in their hands than Nebraska, which there weren't teams that really made Nebraska look slow this year, as far as I could tell. A&M made Nebraska look like their feet were stuck in the mud for most of that game to me.
Yeah, it was a lot like Illinois, where like Nebraska couldn't guard Terrence Shannon. And it's the same thing, where Nebraska on the perimeter just couldn't guard A&M's guards. Like they weren't quick enough, they weren't strong enough to stay in front of them, and they weren't athletic enough to challenge them at the rim. I would probably say that Juwan Gary was like the closest athlete Nebraska had to what A&M had. And A&M had like five or six Juwan Garys. And so that's the difference, you know, is that, you know, Nebraska has been able to counter that lack of athleticism with its shooting and then with its team defense. Well, that defense just wasn't there. You know, the things that have made them so good in the regular season, A&M was just completely able to negate that because they never took the ball to the baseline, where they do that baseline trap and force bad passes and create turnovers. A&M was just beating guys off the dribble. They couldn't stay in front of them. And once they got to the rim, they were either making layups or they'd miss, and then they get the offensive rebound and score off of that. So it was just a kind of an impossible situation for Nebraska, where they didn't have the bodies or the athletes to stop the dribble penetration. And then A&M was just knocking down three-pointers at will. And when they were missing, they were getting second-chance opportunities. So, like, there was zero answers for Nebraska. And a lot of that, I agree, had to do with just the clear advantage A&M had from an athleticism standpoint.
The sadness set in pretty early in that one, for sure. Keisei Tominaga tweeted out a thank you. Looks like the Keisei era is officially over at Nebraska. I know there was some question about whether he might be able to get a waiver for an extra year if he wanted it. Doesn't look like that's going to happen. So with that coming to an end, where do you think Nebraska goes from here? What's the next era of Nebraska basketball?
Yeah, I don't know where that Keisei thing came from. I saw the Reddit post.
Yeah.
It's like so out of left field. I didn't even know how to react to it. So no, he's not getting a waiver. He's moving on. Close the book on that one. But what they do now, the obvious needs are, you got to replace Keisei. They need a elite level shooter, scorer, two guard that can come in and potentially be a day one starter. And I think there's the momentum they have from what they accomplished this season opens some doors for them. And the fan support that they've been able to generate, that's going to open some doors through NIL to where Nebraska is going to be competitive. So we'll see kind of who emerges as legitimate candidates on that front. There's been some names with contact, but that's kind of all it is right now. It's just preliminary contact and interest. I would imagine by the end of this week, you'll probably get a better idea of who realistic, legitimate portal targets are. And a lot of that's just because Nebraska needs to figure out what its roster is going to look like. They had their meetings beginning at the start of this week with Fred Hoiberg, one-on-one with each player. Seen three departures. Really only Eli Rice was much of a surprise. But they got to figure out who all is officially coming back and who's going. And then that'll kind of determine their priority list with, what they go going forward. But scoring guard, rebounding, shot blocking, or at least rim protecting, big to replace Josiah Alec. And then with Blaze Cata gone, probably maybe add a little bit more front court depth. And then whoever leaves after that, I'd say just kind of depends on how the rest of the priorities shake out.
I know this has been a point of debate for a lot of the fans. Do they need a true point guard?
Well, I mean, you think about it, they have one on the roster with Aaron Ulis. He'll be eligible next year. Bryce Williams played really well at point guard towards the back end of the year. So you bring him back, that's a pretty good 1-2 punch. You bring Jamarcus Lawrence back. They spent the last year trying to groom him into point guard play, and it was erratic. But, you know, you would have hoped that with another offseason of work in that role, he'd continue to develop. So that's three guys right there that, you know, you have your starting point guard at the beginning of the year, your starting point guard at the end of the year, and a guy that started 27 games as an NCAA tournament team at Iowa. That's a pretty good combo right there in that lead guard role. So I don't think that's much of a priority compared to other needs. They need scores is what they need. You lose Kase, there's not one player on the roster that can replicate what Kase Tominaga did. So they need to go out and get a true bona fide shot clock's winding down, put the ball in his hands, and then go get a bucket type score. And then, like, you know, their front court losing Josiah and Blaze, you know, they need some more depth there. And they need guys that are proven at this level that we just talked about physicality and athleticism. They need to get some dudes. They need to get some guys that can compete with, you know, those linebackers A&M was trotting out there so they don't get overwhelmed just from a physical standpoint if they get back to this stage next year. So I'd say just improving your size, strength, and athleticism in the front court and getting a bona fide go-to scorer at that two-guard spot are clear number one, two priorities, depending on how you want to rank them. And point guard, for me, it's a little bit down the line, just considering the potential depth they have coming back. But bringing back Bryce is a significant component in that. Jamarcus Lawrence is a component in that. And once those two guys are settled, you know, I think they feel pretty good about that room.
Now, as the portal spins, we'll see what happens and who's coming to Lincoln for next season. Wanted to get your thoughts on the new athletic director, Troy Dannon, had his presser. Were you able to glean anything from his opening remarks as the man in the chair for Nebraska?
I mean, a lot of it is not that different from things we've heard from the last several introductory athletic director press conferences. But I thought what really stood out was his emphasis on NIL and player compensation and being at the forefront of that and singling out 1890 by name and saying he was going to wear their gear just as much as Nebraska gear. Like, that was not happening under Trev Alberts. In fact, seemed like Trev had a lot of resistance towards embracing 1890 as the collective of Nebraska. So I think that is probably the most notable change for me is that, you know, you have basically everybody that's in charge right now is 100% in line with one collective. And I think that's important to get that thing to the level where it needs to be to actually compete in that area at a championship level. So that stood out to me. And then just kind of the way that he, constantly referenced staying at the forefront of the changing landscape not just NIL, but like, you know, the different things that they need to do to be pioneers in just college sports, not just football, but everything. And you go back and listen to Matt Rhule's press conference from a week or two ago, it almost echoed everything Matt Rhule was saying. So I'm sure that's not a coincidence whatsoever. And I think that relationship probably played a big part in why Troy Dannon is here. And, you know, it seems like everybody's on the same page from that standpoint that, you know, Nebraska can't be afraid to take risks. They got to be aggressive when it comes to adapting and changing how they do things to keep up with the rapidly evolving world of college sports. And so, you know, it was good to hear that. And then he also kind of took away that stadium expansion project might be put on the back burner for a while. The fact that he'd been there for almost a week and said that he didn't really know much about it tells you just what kind of a priority getting that thing off the ground is going. So I would anticipate they either delay that or significantly scale back those plans to make it much more manageable financially and also be a lot less disruptive for the actual football seasons to come over the next couple of years.
Last one, then we'll let you get out of here. To me, and I don't know, maybe I'm off base, but it feels like Nebraska's kind of been playing musical chairs with the athletic director. So of the last five, only Tom Osborne stayed for longer than 4 years, right? We had, in the past, you had 10 years of Bill Byrne. You had 25 years of Bob Devaney. Troy Dannon only spent 5 months at his last job. Is this troublesome, or is just the nature of the business now?
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's the reality of universities and both the academic and athletic side, where, you know, these, you know, decades of the same leadership, it's getting harder and harder to come by. Now, it's not like it's impossible. I mean, you see there's plenty of other examples of that type of stability, but Nebraska hasn't sniffed anything close to that in a long time. And I think that is as big of a reason for why the state of Nebraska, at least men's athletics, is what it is because of that, you know, revolving door that has been its most important leadership position. So we'll see. You know, obviously when you take a job and 5 months later you're off to another one, that doesn't bode well for, you know, him being you know, a lifelong fixture of that position. But he was asked that, and, you know, he said that he wouldn't have left Washington after 5 months for many other jobs, if any other job than Nebraska. So maybe that's just you know, saying what people wanted to hear, or maybe it's how he truly felt. I guess you just don't know. Things change quickly. But, you know, I do think that, you know, just based off what he said and what people have said about him, that his short turnaround at Washington wasn't indicative of how he's going to approach this position at Nebraska. He seems like this is a place where he wanted to be, and the people that are closest to him told him that this is a job you can't turn down. And so you would think, in theory, he plans on being here for the long haul. But there are no certainties in today's world, and especially in college athletics.
Yeah, Trev was supposed to be here for the long haul, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Robin Washit, Husker Online. Enjoyed the chat today, man. Thanks for stopping in.
Yep, good talking to you.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll come back, give you a little rundown of the Sweet 16 that gets going tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. Josh and I will give you who we think is going to win, break down the Creighton-Tennessee matchup, and I'll tell you what my favorite game of the Sweet 16 is going to be. That's all coming up next on the Connor Happer Show, 1620 The Zone.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.